Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's good. Good. How are you?
Good. So I'm here with Kenji. Kenji is a poet, artist, arts educator, and creator of the film How to Stop a Revolution. We'll start off with a more general question. What does art mean to you?
What does art mean to me? I don't know. I feel like it's something that I have to do. It's something that I kind of force myself to do, actually. I don't know if this is like the wrong answer, but it's like flossing or something, you know. It's like it's good for me, but because I have a wire that like glued to the back of my teeth, it's like it's a real little chore. 'Cause I have to like find the stupid like expensive like plastic sort of needles and thread the floss like behind the that like wire, and like it's just it's a hassle, but ultimately it's like it's good for you. So I should do it so that I don't lose my teeth before I get like dental insurance. You know, so like right now that's kind of my relationship to art. And once I do it, like just after you floss too, like you feel good. Like it feels good, you know? So and I do feel good like when I'm creating. But right now I'm not really sure why I do it. But I know that I feel good when I've done it and after I've done it. Yeah, it gives me something to look forward to every day. I try to do a piece of art, some kind of artistic thing every day. So, I guess that's what art is for me right now. If you ask me like in 5 days, it might be different, but you know, you're asking me
Probably.
today. Yeah.
How's your blog, Art a Day project going?
Oh yeah, so that's the thing, trying to put up a piece of art a day.
Cool.
It's really tough. It's like, although I do create art every day, it's not necessarily visual art or art that I feel like I can put up on a blog. So the blog is called No Art About Boyfriends. And it's kind of a spoof of my friend Alicia Lim's blog that they were putting up a piece of, they were creating a piece of art a day and putting up a piece of art a day, and they're a graphic artist as well as an illustrator and a musician, all sorts of stuff. So Alicia was doing that, but like you could tell when Alicia was like really infatuated with someone, because for like days and days on end, like all the art would be about that person. And sometimes it got a little like, you know, it kind of got a little bit obnoxious sometimes. Sometimes it's cute, but then, you know, a borderline obnoxious. And we could always make fun of Alicia for that. So I was like, okay, no art about boyfriends on my blog. So if I write about past relationships or whatever, I can't put it on my blog because it's like, you know, it's like against my own rule. So sometimes I create art that I can't actually put up there, or that I'm afraid if I put it up there, then I won't be able to publish it, because sometimes with certain lit journals or publishers, like they want sort of a first run only thing. So if you published it even yourself, like online, that counts as being published, and then people don't want to pick it up after that. So I have to force myself to create like different kinds of art every day, even if I've done a bunch of writing or done a bunch of some things. I still might have to do some more work like before I go to bed, just so I can get it up on that blog. But it's been interesting. I mean, I've been like drawing a lot more than I used to, and I've been getting back into visual arts more, so that's been it's been good.
That's awesome. Have people been responding to the project?
I think positively. I don't know. I've been getting responses from other artists who are like, "Oh, this is so great! I should really force myself to do this too."
That's cool.
Which is how I felt about Alicia's blog. I was like, "This is so great! I really need to do this as well, because that makes me floss every day or whatever." You know, like it's good to do.
It's self-care.
What's that?
It's kind of like self-care in some ways.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. I never really thought of it that way, but I guess flossing is self-care. So yeah. Totally.
How do you feel? Like, I guess it's a really interesting format, blogs too, because you publish it yourself, right? And like, it's accessible for a lot of people. It's like anyone can come see it, whatever. How do you feel about that type of art versus like being published in like books or like being screened at like Inside Out, for example, or like other festivals?
I think it it definitely has the potential to reach a lot more people because it's free.
Yeah.
If you have access to the internet, I mean, it's free. And people can interact with the work, like, on this kind of blog format. People can comment.
Yeah.
People can link to it and whatever. So I'm able to link to other people in my blog, too. I recently put up a little audio clip of a piece that I'm working on with a friend of mine who's a dancer and, like, theater artist. And I was able to, like, link to his, like, YouTube channel.
Cool.
As well. So it was, like, it's just a really neat way of, I guess, referencing each other,
mm-hmm.
which is nice because it feels more like a community as opposed to, like, you go to a screening and, like, mm-hmm. you watch the video or whatever, and maybe you can talk to some people afterwards, but that's it.
Yeah.
Whereas you can have, like, an ongoing sort of dialogue with the blog format. It hasn't happened yet to me, but it's only, like, the seventh day or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. No, that's so exciting, though.
We'll see in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then also, like, the downside is, though, that I don't get paid. You know, it's like,
right.
I'm...
No, totally.
I'm putting this work out that's free. It's like, I don't make any money off of it, but
yeah.
it's still, like, good to do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So you're self-described as an arts educator. What does that mean? What is an arts educator?
Arts educator. I guess I got that from doing work at Asian Arts Freedom School and also running workshops on how to build your own silk screen to do silk screen printing with. And that's kind of how I've been learning about education and, like, community-based education has been through facilitating workshops.
Right. Yeah.
And for the most part, those workshops have been arts-based. So, I mean, not so much in my silk screen printing workshops sometimes, but not so much, but definitely in the Asian Arts Freedom School workshops, there's an element of, like, okay, so we might learn a creative writing skill or we produce some creative writing, but then also the content and this the subject matter that's driving how we write and what we write and what we talk about is, like, learning about ourselves and, like, learning about our own histories. So there's another kind of education going on at the same time as, like, an art, like, an art skill or arts education. So I guess for me that's what arts education means, and as an arts educator, I like to be able to do both. I find it easier for me to facilitate workshops in which there's some creative output component.
Yeah.
Even if we're talking about, even if it's largely like a discussion-based workshop, we're talking about something very heady. It's like, for me, it's a lot easier to do it in an artistic way.
Yeah, Freedom School has been, like, an amazing space for so many people in my life to engage with just other Asian folk and, like, our identities and, like, figuring out our histories and, like, I guess, like, learning about ourselves through each other, which has been really exciting. But also, like, through creating art, I feel like it's a very specific type of, I don't know, it's like there's, like, community building going on, there's, like, self-care going on, it's, like, healing, it's, like, learning, it's, there's a lot of things that happen in that space that are really exciting. Do you want to comment on anything about Freedom School?
Do I want to comment on anything about Freedom School? I'm glad that there's been, like, so many people in your life that have had such a, I guess, a great experience through Asian Arts Freedom School. Yeah, that's really awesome. I mean, it's been going on for some time now. I think they ran their first workshops in 2006 and now we're, what, in 2011?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, and they're still going on, still going strong. Actually, there's more programming now. It's not just the writing program. There's also a theater program that they put on a drag musical at Buddy's and Bedtime Speeder last fall.
Yeah.
In November. And there was a new media program that they partnered with the Art Gallery of Ontario for, and they created video art.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a lot of things sort of that have come out of Freedom School, and oh yeah, and Genderfuck as well, which is a creative writing program for trans and gender variant people of color. So it's not just youth, and it's not just Asians.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so transgender folks of color and indigenous folks. And yeah, I mean, I'm really glad that it exists. I think it was part of how I was able to realize the necessity, I guess, of having art as like a main fixture in my life, and having arts practice as a main fixture in my life. Being able to have a community around me that was also very invested in doing that and was also very excited about doing that was, I guess, a huge motivator. Because I, like, as a kid, like, growing up, I've been kind of, like, into different sort of arts forms, music, writing, visual art, but they were all sort of very individual activities, and, like, I can imagine myself growing out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could have come to a certain point, like, got really bogged down with university or whatever, and just, like, oh, that stuff was, like, in my childhood, now I need to move on and, like, become an adult and, like, not be artistic anymore or whatever. So it was really good that at the same time that I was going through that, like, awful experience at university.
Yeah, yeah,
let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That Freedom School was around.
Right.
Because it was like, oh, other people, like, find this important, so and they're adults, like, they're, like, you know, they're people that I respect, so I'm also allowed to cultivate this and find this important and continue on with this.
Yeah, that's awesome. So your film How to Stop a Revolution was recently screened at the Inside Out Festival. As part of the Mentor video program. Is that true?
Yes.
How was that experience for you?
Wow. I mean, everyone that I tell everyone the same story.
Yeah.
It's true. I feel like it was true. My video is 10 minutes long and 18 seconds. So 10 minutes and 18 seconds long. And I basically held my breath for 10 minutes. Like, for the 10 minutes that it took to watch my video on a
screen. Oh, my God.
You know, I was, like, so nervous.
Right.
I'm lucky to be alive. You know, coming out of that. Yeah, it was really exciting. Just being part of the festival atmosphere, I've never really attended Inside Out before.
Right.
And this was the first year, actually, that they had it at the TIFF Bell Lightbox Theater, which is the theater they built for the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah.
It's like a spaceship inside. It's like so fancy.
Wow.
And it's out of this world. Like, literally, like, I don't feel like I belong there, but I belonged there.
Yeah.
You know, like, my video was being screened there.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. I feel like video is such a, it's such an interesting art form that I've never really worked that much with before, because of how people receive it. I feel like people receive it very differently than how they receive poetry, or how they receive my poetry. Where it's like, it seemed to be able to cut across lots of differences. I guess I was able to reach a lot more people than I feel like I'm able to speak to with my poetry. It's like, I got, like, because all sorts of people attended the screening, all sorts of people came up and talked to me afterwards about it. So it was a really good experience for me to see, like, oh, what are the possibilities of connecting to audiences if I expand outside of just writing. Or whatever, because video works on so many different levels. It's like, you have to think about, like, visual, you have to think about movement, you have to think about audio stuff, which is, like, really foreign to me. You have to think about scripting and writing and, like, moving a story along. So it's, like, so many things that you have to be able to work with. And so I feel like the audience is able to connect on different levels to it. So it was, like, that was really cool to realize.
Sweet.
And yeah, just being part of the festival atmosphere and feeling like I belong at this like huge festival and this like huge fancy huge fancy theater where they don't actually scoop popcorn for you. It's like pre-bagged popcorn, so they don't think their hands dirty.
Oh my gosh, that's really bizarre.
It was like a lounge bar. Like you go up to a lounge bar basically to order your popcorn. And you like don't you feel ashamed to like order popcorn? Well, I did anyway.
Oh my gosh,
for the first few times. But yeah, so it was like, weird. But I belong here. You know.
So yeah,
that was cool.
Exciting. Yeah, that's cool. Do you want to tell us a bit about your film?
Yes. So, yeah, it's called How to Stop a Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the breakdown of a relationship, basically, between two queer racialized people.
Mm-hmm.
And my work is usually just depressing, so like it could only ever be about a breakdown of a relationship. It could be a happy ending. But
all right. Got it.
But I kind of made it as an allegory for, I guess, what happens to a lot of marginalized communities where we just, like, end up enduring so much shit
right.
That marginalizes us and produces us as racialized
mm-hmm.
or whatever it produces us as, that sometimes we even end up internalizing, or oftentimes we end up internalizing all that shit. And then we just take it out on each other,
mm-hmm.
which then makes it a lot easier for the people who want to keep us down, to keep us down, because we're just, like, busy fighting each other and not sort of fighting for each other and, like, against what's keeping us down.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be sort of an allegory. So I had... So I was really concerned, actually, about the audience misreading that
mm-hmm.
by the audience, like, seeing these two individuals on screen and being like, oh, it's their individual story.
Right.
But really, it's not. So I tried to sort of make it as non-individualized as possible. What's the opposite of that? What's the opposite of individualized? Anyways, whatever that is, non-individualized. So I didn't have the characters speaking on screen. So you didn't know their voices, so you couldn't relate to their personal voices and, like, think, like, oh, that, like, she sounds like that, and she sounds like that, or whatever.
Yeah.
But I had, instead, like, multiple narrators. And the actors that I did use as the two main characters were part of the narration, but you couldn't tell, like,
right.
which voice matched their face. Because I think I had about, like, 13 or 16 different narrators.
Wow.
And the narrative... structure was basically sort of a poetic, like, I don't know if it was a complete poem, but it was poetic, like, instances of this divide and conquer process,
mm-hmm.
of this breakdown process. So I had each narrator sort of reading a line from that, and they're all very distinct voices. You can tell it's, like, very different people sort of reading these things. So this cuts across what we think, oh, it's just these two people on screen. Like, no, there's so many. Like, it's all of us. Like, those two people are all of us. And so we need to think about how we do this to each other and how we can stop doing this to each other.
That's amazing. That sounds so awesome.
Yeah, I thought it would be awesome, too, until I started working with the audio tracks and, like, the 25 audio tracks. My editors were like, what are you doing?
That would be a nightmare of an editing
process. It was so confusing. Yeah, I think I ended up, like, messing up some of the right-left, like, alignment and, like, I don't know. I mean, I have to go back, and I still want to work on it some more.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was a time constraint within the project, so we had to, like, get this out ready, obviously, for the festival. Because you're guaranteed screening at the festival, which is awesome. So, yeah.
Wow. I'm really excited to watch it eventually when that happens. I will find it.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you get to see it at some point.
Yeah, no, I really want to. Like, I feel like it's such an interesting concept, and it's so brilliant in terms of, like, posing it as a relationship between two queer folks of color and, like, making that an allegory for, like, revolution. Like, even the title, How to Stop a Revolution, like, dividing and conquering our community, like, these, like, be it real or, like, imagined divides that are created amongst us, mm-hmm. like, And, like, specifically in, like, I like that it's a relationship. It's not just, like, you know, organizing, you know, there's, like, drama in organizing. Right. It's, like, specifically a relationship and how we deal as individuals with each other and people we love and we care about, like, you know.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we can all relate to that.
Yeah.
Like, even if we've never been a part of, like, organizing.
Exactly.
Or, like, capital O, whatever, we've had some sort of intimate relationship in our life, whether that's with a romantic partner or with a family member or a friend, whatever, right?
It's, yeah.
like... Everyone can sort of relate to that. So.
Yeah, and I like connecting that to the idea of revolution and how, like, I feel like that is necessary. Like, building relationships with each other, like, is how we're going to have a revolution. Like, it is, like, through, like, queer bodies of color, like, you know, working together and, like, you know, taking care of each other. So it's, like, important to, like, think about how those divides happen in our communities and in our relationships. So I'm excited to watch.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything more you want to say about your film? Any more about the process or, like, the program or anything?
Yeah, so I would encourage people to apply to this next year, actually, this opportunity that I had to make this video. It's called the Queer Video Mentoring Project or Mentorship Project. I can't remember which one. But it's a project at the Inside Out Film Festival. LGBTQ Film Festival, or sorry, not LGBTQ, LGBT Film Festival in Toronto puts on. Basically we take, like, four queer youth and four queer seniors, like, over 55, and teach them how to use camera, how to do the editing. They train them on all this equipment, about basic elements of storytelling, about basic elements of, I guess, video making.
Wow.
And hook you up with a mentor who's been making queer video for a long time. And then you get the camera and equipment for a few days, you go out and you make your video. And then you come back, you do the editing, and then it's guaranteed a screening at the Inside Out Film Festival in Toronto, which is, like, really amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, folks should apply. Just, like, go to the Inside Out website or Google. Probably it's better to Google Queer Video Mentorship Project. I think it's mentorship.
Awesome.
And get involved if you're under 25, I think. I was, like, at the cutoff, or over 55.
Gotcha.
Then, like, apply.
Cool. That's really great. Okay, the next... I'm, like, bad at segueing right now. I don't know why.
Hey, whatever.
The next topic of discussion would be Pride. So it's Pride Week here in Kingston. It's Pride Week in Kingston. I don't know what to say.
Is that all there is? It's like Pride Week. We just say it's Pride Week and then
No, there's stuff that happens, but we don't have to talk about Kingston. I want to talk to you. I'm talking to you.
Okay.
So what is your relationship to Pride, or, like, the idea of Pride, and how, I'll just ask you that one first.
What is my relationship to Pride? Oh, geez. I don't know. It's complicated.
Yeah, totally. It's so complicated.
I remember being, like, 16 and living in Brampton, which is it's a separate city, but, like, essentially it's a suburb of Toronto.
Yeah.
And like, coming down to Yonge Street, like, taking, like, a three-hour bus ride, like, this roundabout bus ride, when it usually, like, to drive down Toronto only takes, like, 20 minutes. But anyways, like, this roundabout three-hour bus ride with my one other, like, gay friend, and we'd come down Yonge Street, and, like, we'd walk up and down Yonge Street for hours and hours and hours, and, like, then we'd, like, go to the Second Cup on Church Street and then go home.
Yeah.
And we'd be, like, that was our only, like, relation to anything gay.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that gayness can even, or, like, queerness can even exist was, like, going down to Yonge Street. Like, we didn't know.
Like,
Yonge Street is not, I mean, gay and queer or safe for so many people, right?
Yeah.
That's what we did. So, being able to go to Yonge Street when Pride was actually happening was, like, okay, like, this is a huge deal. Like, it's actually, at this point, it's cool to be gay. And that was so important, I think, for me as a 16, 17-year-old, like, living in Brampton. And, like, I remember one time, like, seeing a teacher from my high school, like, on the sidelines at the Dyke March or whatever. I was like, oh, my God, she's gay. And I was, like, scandalized, but also, like, happy and proud. But at the same time, like, you know, we could be teachers and not be us, just as, like, students didn't disrespect her. Like, it was, like, you know. So it was really good, I think, for me to be able to be immersed in that.
Yeah.
I didn't actually participate in anything in Pride, but just to see sort of that gay people, like, do big fabulous things. This was amazing.
Totally.
Pride Toronto has been, like, screwing over lots of people for a long time, however.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, like, beneath, I guess, the celebration, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens. They've been really trying to push out any black queer contingent in Pride. I mean, Blockarama, which is, like, this huge, amazing performance space and party that the black queer community established long time ago at Pride, was, like, was so popular and was so, like, I guess, lucrative to Pride that they ended up kicking Blocko out of the space that they had, which is, like, the parking lot of the beer store that's across from the
main stage,
queer, like, community center. Yeah. And they created it as, like, the main TD stage because it was drawing so many crowds each year because it was so popular. Because the black queer community, like, worked so hard and were so great to, like, make it like that, right?
Totally.
And they've been trying to push Blocko, like, further and further away from the main festivities for a long time while, like, basically profiting and benefiting off of all that work that they put into it, like, years and years and years ago and, like, ongoing, right? And there was that whole thing last year that blew up with Kwaya, Queers Against Israeli Apartheid, and that's still kind of going on, like, they don't want them to provide whatever, like, funding, city funding, whatever. It's, like, it's really complicated. Also, the trans community has started to organize their own march in the parade because they don't feel included in the other marches and parades, like the Pride Parade on Sunday. They don't feel included in the Dyke March on Saturday for several reasons. So they're also just, like, they're doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So lots of people are, like, kind of not just ignored, but, like, oftentimes, like, purposefully pushed aside by Pride organizers and, like, by Pride goers as well, like, let's be honest. So, and that really hurts me as a queer, racialized, trans person. Yeah. Like, who's political, like, for me, a lot of my queerness, I guess, is political, or that's why I've come to respect my queerness, like, my queer history and my queer roots and my queer elders, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they had to fight, you know, like, literally, like, tooth and nail, like, blood and whatever, like, really had to fight to be able to even have spaces at bars, let alone whole, like, streets to march down and be fabulous. I guess I'm not a black queer person, but as, like, the one racialized queer, like, huge queer presence at Pride, the Blockarama, to have that pushed out, like, I feel like it also sends an example.
Totally.
That's, like, okay, what is, like, allowed at Pride? What is Pride Toronto really about? So, yeah, I guess that stuff really hurts me to know that that's what goes on.
Yeah.
So it's a complicated relationship to Pride. And then also, sometimes I don't feel proud, like, of being queer, or, like, of being, especially of being trans or, like, having trans experience. Like, it was really sad to sort of realize, like, that first year the trans march was happening, like, I didn't need bladders or whatever, but, like, I did not feel comfortable carrying them on the subway to get to the march, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel proud about this stuff. but we're having a trans pride march. And so, like, what does that mean to me to be in that march? Should I even be there?
Right.
So, yeah, it's, like, it's really complicated. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, my relationship to pride or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
I don't think that I'll, I don't usually go to, like, all the parties or whatever. I might go to some of the performances. But, yeah. So, I don't know. That's a long answer.
No, that's totally fine. And exactly what I want to talk about. In terms of, like, how different parts of our identities affect our relationships to Pride. Because Pride in Kingston is obviously really different than what Pride in Toronto is. A lot more one-dimensional here. how are you feeling about some of the events that are coming up for Pride, like Stonewall TO or, like, the Day of Art workshops and stuff? Are you involved in that at all?
No, actually, I've not been... I don't really keep up with Pride goings on until, like, it's, like, repeatedly, like, multiply, like, slammed in my face. Basically, like, I didn't know what was going on with Quiet for a long time or with Blockarama even for a long time until it was, like, come up, like, repeatedly. I'm like, okay, this is, like, something that I should be paying attention to, you know? So, and because it was so, like, awful last year, too, like, I think, like, a lot of us, and the G20 was happening at the same time in Toronto, basically.
It was a horrible time.
A horrible, exhausting, scary, like, bad time in Toronto last year. So, I've kind of just been, like, not really paying that much attention to what's going on. But I know that some people are organizing some, I guess, like, kind of, like, subversive, like, pushbacks. Or, like, saying, like, no, this is actually where we come from. We don't come from Pride Toronto Incorporated. You know, like, this is actually where queer liberation or whatever queer, like, movements come from. Like, I know there's, like, an event called Back to Our Roots that I don't know too much about, but I think that's kind of what they're talking about there. I think it's an arts event. So that's really great. Like, I'm really glad to... to see that that's happening. But yeah, I'm just so exhausted from last year. My God.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm still exhausted too. Okay, is there anything more you want to talk about with Pride? Or
we...
All right, moving on.
moving on.
All right. Okay, you're the program coordinator. Okay, we already talked about Asian Art Freedom School, and you said that art and literature, magazine of stuff they don't teach you is kind of fizzled out now, or it's, like, on the back burner?
Yeah, it's on the back burner. I was trying to complete my undergraduate degree at the same time as doing, well, several things, but one of them was the school magazine, online sort of art and literature mag. The first two issues were, like, amazing. Like, I got tons of amazing submissions and put together, I think, a really great sort of collection of work from some people that I knew, some people that I didn't know. Yeah, like, people who were basically the goal of the magazine was to print and to publish underrepresented artists, but also underrepresented artwork. So, and just coming from my own experience of, like, okay, I'd be hard-pressed to find a trans of color writer who's prolific and published.
Yeah,
I might be able to find one, actually, but not... much more than that, you know.
Yeah.
But there's definitely lots of us who do create art. So, like, what the heck?
Totally.
You know? So, like, for me, that would be underrepresented artists are an example of one. And then underrepresented artwork. Underrepresented artists can also create underrepresented artwork. But I feel like overrepresented artists can create underrepresented artwork and then have a hard time getting it published.
Right.
So, I can't think of, like, an example off the top of my head, but I'll just make one up.
Sure.
And this is just false, so, like, don't say this is what happened. But, like, say Margaret Atwood, for instance.
Right. Yeah, no, I get it.
Margaret Atwood, like, started writing about how how the slut walk was offensive because it totally appropriated indigenous and of color experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say Margaret Atwood started writing about and creating art about that. Okay, I feel like that would be underrepresented artwork. But
right.
She's not an underrepresented artist.
Yeah,
right?
It's true.
So, I was into, like, publishing stuff by people who didn't have a hard time getting published, but who, when they did certain work, that was hard to get published for them.
Yeah,
just to sort of level out the playing field a little bit, get that work out there, because I feel like literary journals can be kind of insular. They kind of all work together. You sort of see one name in one journal and then see it again in another journal. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like this thing going on. So just to have something a little bit outside of that. I'm not the only one doing that work, by the way. There's other journals that do sort of do that, but I just thought I'd add to the movement, I guess, as well.
Yeah, that's exciting.
But yeah, I mean, I was trying to complete my undergrad degree and, like, having a rough time with that. So I wasn't able to do as much work. I wasn't able to do proper outreach and whatever, so I didn't get, like, the third and fourth issues up. But I would like to pick it up again because I still feel like it's important, and I really enjoy reading new work, like being exposed to new work that I wouldn't normally get exposed to. So it's very inspiring for me as an artist even to do that. So yeah, I'd like to do it again for sure.
That's really exciting. Another open-ended question. How do you feel your art and politics intersect? We've been talking about this a lot throughout this conversation, I guess, but not explicitly.
How I feel my art and politics intersect. Right now, I guess my main focus artistically is my first collection of poetry that I've been trying to work on for a year and a bit now. And it's basically trying to answer my own question about, like, why my community, Nikkei community, Japanese Canadians, are one of the oldest communities of color in Canada, but we're one of the least visible, like, least cohesive, least visible, like, people don't know,
mm-hmm.
especially east of the Rockies, like, people don't know, that we actually are four or five generations thick or whatever here. So, for me, like, in that instance, I'm writing to sort of recover myself, which I feel is a political act and a spiritual act as well, to sort of uncensor Canadian national history, but also, I guess, more localized histories in Ontario and in Toronto. Histories about, like, what it means to be a person of color in Toronto. Typically, those histories and, like, textbooks will tell you that people of color in Toronto immigrated here, or their parents immigrated here.
Yeah.
But that's not always true, and people like me, like, get totally erased by that story. So uncovering myself, I guess that's what I'm trying to do through this book, but uncovering myself to people who read it, but also to myself, because, I mean, oftentimes I still have to question, like, do I exist, like, in this way? Like, does my history make any sense? Like, nobody collaborates with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't have any witnesses type of thing.
Yeah.
East of the Rockies, mainly. But yeah. So, for me, that's how my art and politics intersect in that instance. And then, in other ways, I mean, I've been reading a lot of James Baldwin's essays right now.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever read James Baldwin?
I have not.
Have you heard of him?
Yes, I have.
Yes. So, like, for folks who haven't heard of him, he's passed now, but gay, black writer in the States in, like, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and really radical. Like, he was very radical, and he had to be, like, for several reasons, in exile in Europe for a while to write and whatever. But he says some really amazing stuff about art and honesty, particularly with protest literature, and saying, like, you know, we can't just write out one-dimensional characters. It makes for bad art, but then it also, like, denies the humanity of the situation. Because, like, humans and humanity is very complex.
Yeah.
Like, we do a lot of wonderful things, and we do a lot of really bad, messed up, evil things. And that's the reality. And if we don't, and if we pass it off like that's not the reality, then we're really doing a disservice to ourselves.
Yeah.
So for him, it was really important to sort of write honestly and be honest with himself and with his audience. And I totally relate to what he was saying.
Yeah.
So, and oftentimes that stuff will be deemed political because it's grating. I guess for some people, it's really grating to hear certain things, right? So particularly in the political climate that we exist in today, a lot of stuff can be very grating for lots of people to hear. So in that way, honesty gets deemed as political. But it's honesty. It's art. I mean, so yeah.
That was a really good answer. It totally was.
I'm glad you liked it.
I'm serious, because, like, but it's also, like, so emotionally, it's hard to be honest. Like, especially, I don't know, in writing, I feel like it, being honest with yourself is, like, is very difficult, and it is daring, and, like, that is political in some ways. Like, I don't know, and it's, like, people don't really think about that. Like, people see artists who produce work and who are in the public, like yourself, and are, like, in awe of, like, you know, what you do, but, like, often don't understand, like, the emotional difficulties that come with that, or, like, you know, how trying it can be to be putting yourself out there. So I appreciate what you do, and yeah, it's really cool.
Thanks.
Are there any other projects you're currently a part of you want to discuss, or anything you want to promote?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually performing at Pride this year. but it's not part of Pride Toronto. It's part of the Fruit Loops, which another organization supporting our youth puts on every year at one of the Pride stages.
Cool.
And so it's like, it's a youth stage where people under 29 perform their works. And I, for the first time in my life, have been collaboratively working with somebody else on their art. I've been working with a dancer / theater artist, I think I was talking about this a little bit earlier. So we're creating a collaborative dance poetry movement piece.
That's so exciting.
And we're going to be workshopping it at the stage this year on July 4th.
That's so cool.
So, yeah, it's been, like, a really amazing artistic process, because he's just bringing so much to the table and to my work that I would have never been able to realize before. For instance, like, what we're doing, because, and I had to, like, get over this, I guess, different aspect of art, because as a dancer, like, he needs lots of space to be able to create.
Yep.
Whereas, like, as a writer, I can write anywhere, you know? So it's like, we can't just meet up in a coffee shop and work. Cause, like, you'd be dancing all over, like, the tables or whatever. Like, that's not going to fly for most coffee shops. So
it'd be cool,
it's been really hard trying to actually get physically, like, both of us together and able to, in order to work together. So we've been doing it sort of over the internet, in which we had an initial meeting where we talked about sort of where we were planning to go with our art, what our styles were, and then, you know, what we were thinking about concept-wise for how what we would like to create art about together. And then after that, I sort of went away, and I was writing based loosely on what we had talked about. And then I ended up liking it, so I recorded my voice reading my writing in the way that I would perform it to an audience. And I sent him the MP3 as well as the text in text form. And then what he did is he went away and video recorded just on like photo booth on his Mac himself improvising, moving off of my audio recording.
That's awesome.
And it was really amazing because he sent that back to me. And like, I mean, this is a dancer that I've seen him perform before, and I remember being very extremely moved by him.
This is
and
Chase?
I'm like, I want to work with him. Yeah, Chase.
That's awesome. Chase,
yeah, so I was like, yeah, I really want to work with him. And like, luckily he said yes. And so I had already trusted him to be able to just go away and create whatever, and I knew it was going to be amazing because like he's amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then he'd send me this sort of movement that he'd been doing off of my words, and then watching him, I was like, oh, I'm seeing words in what he's doing, and words and phrases that I would have never just come up with on my own.
Right.
So I was being able to write off of his dancing, off of my words, like, and then I just like that wasn't amazing enough. Like, then he's like, oh, I think we could maybe put some like music or some soundtrack to like your words and whatever. And then he sent me some music, and it added a whole new amazing dimension to my words that didn't change the meaning, but just enhanced it, which is all right. Like you can really ask for as an artist. So. It's just been this really amazing, like, mind-blowing creative experience working with him.
Yeah. That's so exciting.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. Hopefully we can get it together in time.
You got a few weeks. You'll be good.
Yeah.
July 4th?
I'm also working... What?
July 4th is when it's...
July 4th, yeah.
Cool.
I'm also trying to write my first piece of short fiction.
Wow.
As well. I saw this call out for this anthology of trans short fiction in the States a while ago, and the deadline's in August, so I was like, well, I'm going to try. I felt like I've always failed miserably at fiction, but I'm going to like try. I'm going to really study hard how to write it, study lots of contemporary short fiction, and, like, figure out what they're doing, and then try to do it. And I have a couple of writing mentors who have been really open to being able to help me along this way and critique my stuff and give me some pointers. So, that's a new scary thing that I'm trying out right now, too.
That's so exciting, though.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, the last thing that was on the table was your film being shown on June 20th as a part of Glitter Skirts and Shorts Pride Edition at the Center for Women and Trans.
Yes.
In Toronto?
At U of T, yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. How are you feeling with this?
Yeah. I haven't even had time to think about it, to be honest. I just don't like... I guess after the festival, it's kind of a whirlwind where I'm like, I have to figure out how to distribute my video. I have to figure out how to edit it first before I distributed it. But, I'll think about it now. It's exciting. Yeah, I'm glad because, I mean, this time people don't have to pay to go see it, right? It's like it's a community-based event. It's not some big festival that they need to be able to get people's money to continue operating their big budget.
Right.
So a lot more people will be able to see it, and a lot of people that maybe wouldn't necessarily go to see this kind of work will be seeing it because the trans film nights at U of T have historically been films about trans characters.
Okay.
And it's had a huge turnout so far. Like, they've really done great things in terms of like connecting people to these kinds of films and being able to see themselves reflected in them. But my work doesn't actually have any trans people in it, or doesn't take up those issues.
Right.
So I feel like people go to trans film to see the trans people on the screen, but they're going to see, I mean, mine is one of many shorts that'll be shown that night, but they're going to see mine bringing up some other questions that I'm concerned with right now about divide and conquer. I guess I'm excited about just getting new audiences to see it and hearing what they have to say about it, or they had similar experiences, or if they thought it was shit, or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's always interesting to hear what people have to say. So.
Yeah, totally. It's always like a good experience to have the director there too, and to be able to engage with them and ask questions and talk and stuff. So,
And there's a Q&A. So yeah, so it'll be good. Yeah.
Cool. So that was pretty much all the questions I had. Is there anything that you didn't get to talk about that you want to talk about?
It's just that I'm no longer the program coordinator of Asian Arts Freedom School. I don't know if you already mentioned that.
Yeah.
In the thing.
Okay.
But I don't want to mislead people. I'm no longer the program coordinator, but the amazing Shivanga Tabor has taken over that position, and she is a rad, like, poet, journalist,
she's awesome.
Organizer, she's a musician, she's like all sorts, she's a dancer, she's all sorts of things. She does everything like extremely well. And she's also just like a really great person.
Right.
So so she's like, I'm so glad that she said yes to sort of taking this position while I develop my own art further.
Yeah.
And just needing time to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, definitely check out Freedom School. Shanga is like running it. Freedom School also opened on the West Coast, Vancouver.
Oh.
There's Nation Arts Freedom School in Vancouver now.
Amazing.
That is going strong. And like, I'm so happy that that's happening there. Because there's such important pan-Asian history.
Yeah.
On that side of the country, to be able to like relate locally to it, I think is really great. So
wow, that's so exciting.
Cool.
Do you have any music requests?
I want to hear George Michael.
George Michael?
Yeah, I've been thinking about his piercing lately. I'm like, should I get a dangly like cross?
Oh my god! That's
for my ear.
Hey, so we'll get some George Michael up in here for you.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Kenji. Yeah.
Thank you.
It was nice to chat. And
good
luck. Thanks for having me. Good luck with June 20th and all of your other amazing projects. Like, so much stuff.
Oh, thank you. I know. I'm like, what am I getting myself into? That's good. Flossing is good.
Yeah, exactly. Flossing is good.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.